Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Well, good evening and welcome to Breaking the Silence. I'm Greg Williams right here in my home in the most beautiful city from my point of view in the world, Houston, Texas. And you can notice right outside my windows here that up here on the 19th floor that it's because of the fall back, it's dark already. So normally we get to see the sunset go back behind me, but boy, it's already down. It's been a beautiful day here in Houston. Tonight we have an awesome program. I am so excited about this. I think it's very timely, and it's one of those authors that I probably, to be honest with you, would have never went down that area of the bookstore to even run across this. But I am so glad that I read this book, and you're going to just be blessed tonight, and I know you're going to want to get a copy of this book. So make sure you have a piece of paper and a pencil or pen handy, and you can even get involved tonight in the program. There's two or three different ways you can do that. You can call in to the wonderful people at BBS radio station at 888-627-6008, and they will ask you your first name, maybe what city you're from, and they will patch you straight into me and the guest, and you'll be able to ask your question or your comment. And there's another way you can actually get on the Shattered by the Darkness Facebook page. We are live right now. My son, my awesome son, my youngest son, that's in the United States Army in Seattle, Washington, where he's stationed. He is running that right now, and I'm looking at it over here to my left, and it is up and running live. But we are live around the world tonight, and I know we have a lot of listeners that are listening in. I would always like to talk about and share something that happened to me this week, or something that's impacted me, or something that just came to mind sometime throughout the week. I was speaking this weekend to the Texas Teachers Association up in Round Rock, which is just near Austin, Texas. And they had a great room full of people, teachers and administrators and aides and things of that order. And we were talking about being trauma-informed, how important it is to recognize that everybody that we walk across and meet and greet and ride an elevator with or pass Walmart or, pass somebody on the street, everybody has their own set of issues and baggage that they're carrying. And to be able to get through what we call life, we talked about resiliency. And I threw out a line that I'm not for sure it was completely understood or if I completely understand it, but I mentioned something on the order of resiliency isn't something that you have to go out and learn. Resiliency is something that is already inside of you. You just have to dig deep enough to discover it. And sometimes in life, we feel that life doesn't get easier or more forgiving. It's just that you get stronger and more resilient to be able to handle those things in life. And I think resiliency is going to be an awesome topic that goes right in to our guest tonight. But, you know, I have a lot of scars on me emotionally, relationally, physically. spiritually, I have a lot of different scars. And my scars remind me that I survived the deepest wounds that in itself accomplished is an accomplishment. But my scars also remind me that the damage life has inflicted on me has in many ways made me a stronger and more resilient and a deeper character of a person than what I am. What hurt me in the past has actually made me better equipped to what I'm going to face in the future. And many times, cleaning the wound is often so much more painful than the cut itself. And that's deep. We could speak an hour just on that for you to sit back and think about that. But there's a couple things that I learned recently that we need to maybe discover more inside of us about resiliency. I need to find a place of purpose in life and in those life challenges. Instead of being discouraged, I need to be more motivated. And I have a little sticky note. It's about, looks like this. And I have a little sticky note that's right on my desk, little overhead hanging on my desk. It says something like this. I don't probably have the quote exactly right, but I am glad I went through everything that I went through in life. Because of those instances, it made me, me. Now, would I change things different? Would I have wanted to be sexually abused all my life as a child? No. But because of that, it made me who I am today. So it motivates me now because of the depth of the character that forced me to develop to try to help as many other people as I can. And I need to also, and you need to also, believe in yourself. Sometimes there's not too many people in your corner cheering you on. But I want to let you know, you need to cheer yourself on. Believe in the depth of who you are and how you can do it. And then be willing to embrace change. I think we're going to find a huge change in our guest life tonight when they discovered something that totally changed everything that they thought about who they were and are and their family history. And then try to stay as positive as you can. In a world that is absolutely filled with negativity, we need to try to fuel as much stuff in our tank and hold that stuff in our tank of positivity. So instead of in the morning reaching for your phone and looking on Facebook or reading the headlines of the news, why would you do that to yourself the first thing in the morning? Why don't you do some mindfulness techniques? Fill yourself with positivity. Open up the word. Meditate. Do something that's going to fill the tank instead of bore another hole in the tank and allow that positivity that you do have to drain out on the ground before your feet ever touch the ground from the bed. And then also make sure you take time to nurture yourself. Take care of yourself. Get some sleep. We all ought to be feeling pretty good because you got an extra hour of sleep last night. At least you should have, or you were like me. You woke up every hour wondering if you're going to oversleep or not because the clocks automatically change or does the phone change? We don't know what's going on, but you're supposed to have got an extra hour of sleep. And then take action. Focus on progress. It took me 35 plus years before I ever made a step forward in progress. And I waited way too long, and it caused way too much internal and mental and emotional damage on me. Don't do that. Start right tonight and make that step forward in progress and take action. And then also, never give up. You are worth the effort. If I had a $100 bill here and I crumpled it up, put it on the floor, stomped on it, dipped it in water, marked all over it, and unfolded it, it's still worth $100. Just because of the bad things that's happened in your life never decreases the value of the person that you are. Matter of fact, I believe it pays interest on who you are, and you become a more fuller, stronger, motivated, and inspired person. And then when we go out and try to help one person a day, we end up blossoming more than what you can imagine. And that's what life is all about. Just crossing paths with people that's on a journey with you and holding their hand during that just short time and making an impact. Just like I believe the next 45 minutes is going to make an impact on you, because we have Linda Brenneman here tonight, and she is the author of The Pulitzer Saga, unbelievable book that I suggest everybody get a hold of. And she grew up in Buffalo, New York. She is the middle child of seven, born to Hungarian physicians who survived World War II and started their new life in the United States in 1941. She has a BA in psychology, went on to get her MBA, and she has all kinds of education. But something happened in a house that almost burnt completely down, and there was a box left that miraculously survived. And in that box were secrets. When she discovered them, totally changed her life. And I'm going to let her tell that story. Linda, can you hear me this evening?
I can. Thank you, Greg, for that wonderful introduction and those beautiful words before that. Thank you.
Well, I tell you, Linda, I want to thank you for being on the program tonight. I know, because your book just came out in September, so it is still, the ink still smells. When you open up the book,
yes,
and you smell the ink, and I love that smell.
It does. I'm going to hold it up if it's okay. I'm going to hold it up.
Please do. Look at the beauty of this book. And did I pronounce that right, Pulitzer?
Yes, the Pulitzer Saga.
The Pulitzer Saga. Did you come up with that title?
Well, it's my family name.
Right.
So
come from the city of Pulitz?
Yes. So there's a city in what's now Czech Republic called Pulitz, and it's actually a little bit different name now, but it was Pulitz. And in 1789, when Jews were forced to take on last names, because most of them used patronyms, like my great-great-great-grandfather from that era was known as Isaac, son of Joseph. But in 1789, they were forced, this was all part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire at the time, and for tax purposes, because they wanted to collect taxes, they forced all the Jews to take on surnames. And in most cases, they were not allowed to choose their names. They were given the names by authorities. And so they were given the name. In his case, he was given the name Pulitzer from Pulitz. And it actually happens to be the same town where Joseph Pulitzer, the magnate, you know, the newspaper magnate, was also from. So, and the families knew each other.
Unbelievable. So,
and as a matter of fact, they married each other too. So
that's great. Show the book cover one more time and explain to me the tree and the symbolisms that's on the cover of this book.
Yeah. You know, something it's interesting. The more, you know, we worked on this cover, it was really important to me to get it right. Because the tree is, you know, sort of the tree of life. It shows your ancestors, and your roots. And I will say, I think before I really went into this discovery, I wasn't sure about my roots. You know, I knew I had parents and my grandmothers, but I didn't know anything else. So having this incredible root system was a huge gift to me. But also, the Star of David is just faintly within those roots, and learning that I was Jewish and had this remarkable Jewish family was again such a huge gift to me. So yeah, it was. I love the cover.
Yeah, it you know, everything about this book has class and beauty.
Oh,
the pictures, the quality, even the family tree. I mean, you open up and the Kindle version is just gorgeous, because the colors just vibrate off the page, and it has all of the, I wish I knew that much about my family. So before these facts that are in the book and all of this research, what did you know or think you knew about who you are and anything about your background? What was told to you by your dad?
Well, you know, what was really interesting is growing up, you don't question your parents usually. So I thought I knew who I was.
Yeah.
You know, and we were brought up Catholic. So I thought I was the daughter of Catholic Hungarian parents. And they loved Hungary. They spoke about Hungary. They, spoke about their home and various memories and so on. But they left out the fact that my father was Jewish. So I assumed that I was a Catholic Hungarian girl. And then when I was about 27, actually, by accident, we found out, my older sister actually found out when she traveled to Montreal for a medical meeting. My sister is still a doctor. And she was going to Montreal for a medical meeting, and she stayed with her godparents. And she asked an innocent question: what was my great-grandmother Margie like? She thought it was innocent. But her godmother came back and said, well, like all Jewish women, she really ruled the roost. And my sister did a double take. What do you mean, Jewish woman? And my godmother was like, whoops, I thought you knew. So that was how we found out. It was sheer accident. And I was 27 years old. I was in graduate school. I was busy with my career. I just accepted it and went on. And I asked my mother, I said, is this true? And she said it was true. But my father actually never would never own up to it. To his dying day, he would not say that he was Jewish.
Why do you think that is, Linda?
I think it. The more I researched and learned about what they went through, they went through such incredible trauma, and I can go into that a little bit. But
yes,
I think it's. Such incredible trauma. And then coming here, they came in 1949. When they came in 1949, the U.S. was very anti-Semitic also. So I think it was easier because my mother was Catholic. But it was easier just to say we're a Catholic family. And I think it was really out of love and protection of his family. He didn't want us to experience what he experienced.
Do you feel that the anti-Semitism has changed over the years?
Oh, I think it's a little scary right now.
Yeah.
I think the kinds of things I think certain things happened in the last 8 years that have allowed hatred and dehumanization to be okay. Whereas before that was not the case. I think we went through many years where, it was still under the surface, but it wasn't empowered. And I think the last 8 years it's been empowered, and it's very scary.
It amazes me that some days it seems like it's not as prevalent or noticeable. And then all of a sudden something happens like what's recently happened. And then
exactly.
the ugliness comes out of people, and it's just like, what? Where did this come from? This is America. What are we doing to ourselves? I don't understand. And I'm sure, how did you deal with thinking you were Catholic Hungarian, and then recognizing and learning that you have this other layer that is deep roots into the Jewish culture?
Yeah, you know, first of all, even before I found out, my mother was just an incredible woman. We didn't really find out everything about her until a lot later also, and which I'll explain. But when we grew up, she always told us, it doesn't matter what a person's religion is, what the color of their skin, what their economic status is, what their ethnicity is. It doesn't matter. You treat everybody with dignity and respect. And that was hammered into us from, you know, when we were little. So that's part of the reason why I don't really understand this, but for my mother, what we found out later on is it was interesting. I went with both my parents to Budapest in 1990. It was right after the wall came down, and both my parents are physicians. So my father was doing some consulting for a pharmaceutical company at the time, and he was very busy. So I got to spend a lot of time with my mother, and she said, and I asked her questions because I had just found out at that point, I found out that I was Jewish. So I was peppering her with questions, but she told me in most cases, she told the truth, but in some cases she was still keeping a lot of secrets, but she was also a very humble person. And she said to me, I'll never forget this. She said, well, you know, I hit a few people, and I didn't really understand what that meant. And then in 2006, we get this invitation from the Israeli embassy that they're honoring my mother. And it was for Righteous Among the Nations. And I didn't know what that was. I called my close friend Yona up and I said, what is this? And she said, well, you know, it is the highest honor that the Israeli government gives to non-Jews who risk their lives to save Jews during the Holocaust. So my mother was awarded Righteous Among the Nations, and you know, probably the most famous of those is Oskar Schindler. People know Oskar Schindler, people yes. know Raoul Wallenberg, people know Karl Lutz. So her name is up on the wall with those people. But what was interesting is in 2006, she was suffering from Alzheimer's. She didn't really know. She sort of knew what was going on, but she was really not in good shape. And but I'll never forget this. There were lots of reporters around, and a reporter walked up to her and said, you know, why did you do this? Why, you know, how, why did you risk your life? How did you have the courage to save these people? And she said, clear and crisp, she said, I did what any other human being will do. So when you think about what's going on today and the anti-Semitism that you just talked about, it's like, we need to be human. We need to find our humanity and do what is, you know, kind and compassionate, and find those kinds of things so that we honor every single individual. And these kinds of atrocities are just, you know, if you're a human being, you can't do this. So we need to find other solutions.
And that recognition was called Righteous Among Nations.
Righteous Among the Nations, yes.
And that was given to her in Israel?
In New York, in the Israeli consulate.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Did it surprise you? Because I was amazed, because here you talked about your mom and dad and your sister being in the medical field. If I read the book correctly, from the beginning of time almost, when you started finding out about your ancestry, how many doctors, lawyers, I mean, it wasn't just a casual group of people that is in your lineage. It was pretty big hitters with some huge roles, entrepreneurs, the musicians and the pianists, wonderful people. Do you feel that the DNA in that type of character is passed down and passed through the roots of a family tree? That may be possibly why a lot of your family today is in that medical field. Do you think that's just a lineage that you didn't even know about, but isn't that interesting how it correlates?
You know, I don't know if it's DNA, but I do think there's values that are passed down from generation to generation. I mean, I don't know, what does the Bible say? That, you know, the sins of your father, you know.
The sins back, will.
Yeah. But they go back eight generations. But, you know, I will say that was the one thing that was so remarkable about learning about my family, these ancestors. You know, my father lived these values. Both my parents lived these values. They were all about service, and their service was through being a doctor. But, you know, when I really investigated these ancestors, these values were their values that they had to pass down to him. And it was remarkable because, as you mentioned, you know, one of the my ancestors is very famous, Adam Pulitzer. So Adam Pulitzer was a doctor. He was, to this day, he's considered the father of otology, which is ear, about the ear. And if you talk to most ear, nose, and throat surgeons anywhere throughout the world, they will recognize his name. So what was remarkable when I started, you know, learning about Adam, and I learned about, you know, how he was an incredible inventor. He invented a device that's still used today. He was an incredible clinician. He went to a woman's poorhouse and really started working with them. That's where he learned about a lot and researched a lot of their ear diseases. So he was treating the poor. He treated royalty. He treated the Tsar Nicholas. He treated the King of Belgium. And he was part of the court of Franz Joseph, which was very, very unusual because most Jews, and there were almost no Jews that did that. So, and there was a lot of pressure on him to convert, but he would not convert. But his biggest pride and joy was teaching his medical students. And when I looked at my father's career, it was almost identical. You know, he loved to teach, and he had, I can't tell you how many papers and articles and books and things of that nature. So it's almost like he patterned his career after Adam. So to learn about this was just, you know, it's like, I wish he would have told me, you know, the stories that I think he never knew Adam, because Adam died in 1920 and my father was born in 1924, but my grandmother would have known him.
Yes.
My grandmother never said a word either. So, yeah.
I tell you what, Linda, we're going to take our only break tonight. And I hadn't even got to anything on my list. I'm just absolutely in awe and fascinated. I want to find out more about this box.
Okay.
More about your emotions when you opened it on the other side of this break. And then I want to drill a little bit deeper about, you know, how did you start dealing with this? And then how did it come about to have this exhibit? And that exhibit was absolutely gorgeous that you can go on your site and look at and see some of it. But I want to talk about some of the things that I noticed in the exhibit. I will say, hey, what's the significance of that? But we're going to do that after about, oh, it's 102 seconds. We'll be right back after this commercial break, 888-627-6008. And you will not want to miss this last segment because you're going to find out about this mysterious box and what happens when she opens it. This is going to be beautiful. We'll be right back.
Thank you.
HCI Publishing that brought you the international bestsellers A Child Called It and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
Good evening. Welcome back. We have Linda Brenneman, the author of the Pulitzer Saga. And tell you what, the commercial just said, hey, buy my book. Go on Amazon and buy hers tonight, because this is the one that's going to be entertaining. And it tells such a beautiful story. And Linda, I have to be honest, I would have never read anything like this. And it expanded my horizons of what life is all about. And it gave me a new appreciation for culture, for the Jewish world, for heritage. So tell me, this box apparently survived World War I, World War II, a house fire, and was
the Hungarian, the Hungarian Revolution of 1956.
Yes, the revolution. Did your sister find this box?
Yeah,
How this happened? My
parents' house caught fire. Unfortunately, my mother actually died as a result of that, which was But my sister lived about 10 minutes away from my parents in Buffalo, and so she, you know, ran over to the house and with her husband and her. She, one of her daughters was there too, and they just started pulling things out of the house because, you know, the firemen had put out the fire, but then there's the water damage, and there's just, it was horrible. So she tried to just pull out things that weren't immediately destroyed and tried to save them, but she didn't even know. I mean, it was just sort of in the chaos of it all. She didn't even know what she had. They were taking it to her house. And about 5 years later, she was cleaning out a closet and she found this box, and she didn't even know about it. And it just happened to coincide with I had decided that I was finally going to search, you know, start on this journey of discovery. I was finally going to do it. And I had been talking to her. I was frustrated because the only name I knew was Adam Pulitzer, who we just talked about. And so I started looking him up, and he's got a Wikipedia page and all of this, you know, lots of articles and books, all in German. So it's, you know, I was a little bit frustrated and I didn't know where to go. And then she happens to find this box, and you know, the synchronicities and I feel like there was some kind of guiding hand, because you know, resources appeared at the right time for this. So you know, she sent me the box. She'd opened it and she said, there's a lot of papers in here, a lot of papers and pictures and documents, but they're all in Hungarian. So she sent it to me and I started to go through them, but they were in Hungarian, and Google and Microsoft Translator don't do well with Hungarian. It's a very difficult language. So I knew I needed a translator, and I kept, you know, looking for somebody, and through a friend of a friend, I ended up finding this woman who lives about a half an hour from me. Her name is Anna Beyer. She's lovely, lovely lady. I took over a folder and I thought we'd spend an hour at her house. And 6 hours later, and you know, and she starts telling me some of the things that happened during the Holocaust, for example, that I was completely unaware of. Things like, for example, the Yellow Star houses, which were unique to Budapest. You know, rather than putting people in the ghetto, at least in the beginning, eventually they did have a ghetto, but they had these Yellow Star houses that had the Yellow Star on it. And they, for example, my whole family, who had this huge apartment building that was inhabited by every single family member. So family member of, you know, 12 people or so, they were given one room in a Yellow Star house and 5 days to pack up their things and move it into the house. So these kinds of things, you know, I was just completely unaware of. And she said, you know, you really, with these documents, you really need to find somebody who can help you research it properly. And then I needed to do my own historical research, which I spent a lot of time doing. But she put me in touch with a gentleman called András Gazicki, who was an amazing person, just an amazing sleuth, an incredible person, very, you know, he had been very high up in government, and he was minister, chief of staff of the Minister of the Interior of Hungary, and then chief of staff to the mayor of Budapest, and had been blackballed for 8 years because he did not want to go with the Orban government. So, you know, I met these people that are just unbelievable people in their own right. And he took on this project and just was an amazing sleuth. He was an incredible person, and sadly died in 2021, July 2021.
Was he in the video of the yes. one video on the webpage where he began the video and ended the video? Yes. Those were his words, and that's him talking, right?
That is him talking, and that was maybe a month before he died.
Wow.
Yeah, he was just an incredible person. So when he started doing his research, he would, you know, call on colleagues and friends and so on, and one of the, and go to places to, you know, try to find documents. And one of the places he would go, there's a the Hungarian Museum, Hungarian Jewish Museum and Archives, and he took us down into the basement of these archives. They have these humongous registers. You can't believe it. And, you know, handwritten, from dating back from, you know, 1700, no, maybe not 1700s, but 1800s and on. So just an amazing place. And, you know, they had saved a lot of these documents during the Holocaust. So any rate, as he started to share some of the things that we were finding, it happened to coincide with the time that the Rombach Synagogue was being renovated. And they had, on the third floor of the Rombach Synagogue, they wanted to create a permanent exhibit that would help actually inspire other Hungarians to learn about their own backgrounds. And so through this story, that's how this exhibit came to life. So the exhibit is made up of 10 films that are each 7 minutes long, and each of them are based on the stories in the book. So the story's here.
And so that's an ongoing exhibit. It's not just a temporary, it's ongoing. That's wonderful.
Oh, it's permanent. It's permanent.
One thing when I saw that is, number one, I noticed the beauty of that exhibit. It's like, wow, this is top notch. There was a crystal or a clear glass cylinder with a white feather dangling in the middle of that. What's the significance of that? Help me. Did I miss
it's
something?
A pen.
Is what?
It's a pen. It's a pen.
Oh, it's a pen.
From the 1800s.
Okay.
And
it's like
and
a quill
that,
pen.
Yeah. And that's, you know, when you look at the exhibit, you know, the reason we have these stories, and that's one of the things that I'll explain in a minute, is because there were also a lot of writers in the family. And the reason we know these stories is one of the things that András had found through a cousin is they had saved a book that was written by Sigmund Pulitzer, and Sigmund died in 1920. So, but he had done the family research. So that's why we knew these stories starting from the 1700s. So he had done his own research. He, you know, actually interviewed rabbis and people that knew his, you know, they would have been his great, great grandfather. And so, and he had detailed stories. So that's one of
the book that was had the black marble cover that said my family tree or something like that on it.
That's another story. That was literally just a family tree. And that I thought that was written by my father's cousin, but I'm starting to rethink that. And I think that might have been my grandmother. But this was a story, and this was a book, and I have the cover there's a picture of it in the book.
Yes.
It was called Our Family History by Sigmund Pulitzer. So that's where some of the stories came. But then also my father's cousin was, he was autistic, and he, very interesting. And he unfortunately had been, I know, verbally abused by his father. His father was not a nice man, but Gabor, his name was Gabor Viron. He was autistic, and he was 10 years old when the war broke out in 1944. So he was a lot like Dustin Hoffman's character in Rain Man. He had an unbelievable memory. And he was a brilliant musician. He was a beautiful piano player. And so he wrote this book that details, and without any emotion in it, it details what people wore, what they ate, what music they listened to, and the actions that they took from 1943 to 1945. So that told us, and by the way, he had used pseudonyms for everybody. So we had to sort of puzzle together who was who, but in some cases it was pretty obvious. But he, you know, that's how we learned what really my family experienced during the Holocaust, what happened.
And not only their names, but then you find out what they liked, what they listened to, what they wore.
Exactly.
Just the depth of that was just a gift from heaven, had to be.
Absolutely.
The richness in this.
Yeah, both of these books just were just amazing books. And then, but András was remarkable because he didn't leave anything for chance. If he found one thing, he had to make sure that it was true. So he would check other sources and verify, and he was remarkable. So, yeah, so it was pretty exciting to find all these pieces and really put them together just like a puzzle. So, yeah.
When did you realize Because I think you have the picture of the box, right? I mean, in
Yes.
the book, it's like, this is unbelievable. You actually get to see the picture of the box in color. When did you realize the richness of what was in that box of like, wait, this is life changing?
Well, you know, I didn't, but Anna Bayer did, because one of the things that was found in the box was a letter that was written by my great-great-grandfather, Ignaz Misner. So he, and this letter was written, he was 99 when he wrote it in 1944. And we actually learned that his son actually wrote it, because he was not of complete sound mind at that point. But his son had written it. But he had written, because they had been forced into the Yellow Star House. And, you know, there were also all of these incredible Jewish, anti-Jewish laws that had been, I think there were 267 anti-Jewish decrees that had been passed. So Jews were not allowed, they were not allowed to shop in normal hours. They had 1 hour to shop. They weren't allowed to go to parks. They weren't allowed to go to, you know, any kind of public place, basically. So the restrictions were horrific. And he had written this letter to Governor Horthy asking him for an exemption from the restrictions. And we found out from Gabor's book that he actually received the exemption, but he refused to take off the Yellow Star because he wore it with pride. He wore his Judaism with pride. And that's, I mean, he just says it all about him. He was an incredible person.
And these were your ancestors that prior to all of this action had very exquisite, elaborate jobs, professions, respects. And then all of a sudden, they're in this Yellow Star home.
Well, what's amazing is 10 years before that, that Andras found numerous articles, and he had been honored because he had been one of the founders of the Budapest Bar. He was a big time lawyer, and he was one of the founders of the bar. He was an incredible philanthropist. Andras found instances where he had given to Horthy's wife's causes. So, you know, and then here he was, you know, forced. He'd lost his homes. They had a villa that they lost, their big house in Budapest they lost. He lost his farm. He had a 10,000 acre farm that he had lost. You know, all of it was expropriated by the Nazis, and then later by the communist government. So
how much fuel did this put into your emotional tank of, I have to find out every detail of truth about this? This had to be almost addictive of finding
out. It was.
Yeah. And that drive just had to be, okay, well, we're going to find out tomorrow. And how did you chronicle all of this in such a beautiful way?
Well, that's why I had to write the book. That's really why I had to write the book, because, and in the beginning, I didn't really intend to write a book. I've never written a book before, and I hadn't intended to, but I was so, these stories were just so amazing, and I really needed to do the historical research to understand the times, the culture, their thinking, their zeitgeist of the times. And so I did a lot of my own historical reading books, reading memoirs, reading whatever I could that would give me a sense of the time. And so then to put it together and puzzle it together, I just found that I had to write the book. It just, I had to do it. So it was, I didn't have a choice.
How much knowledge did you have about that culture, that society, prior to this?
Well, really, not that much. And I certainly didn't understand how Jews were treated. You know, for example, you know, going back to the 1700s, you know, Empress Maria Theresa called Jews a plague on the race. You know, and so you start to understand what these people were facing, and so many people of, you know, shall I say, wealthier Jews, are they, and especially there were court Jews, of course, and you know the big names, the Rothschilds, and the, you know, yeah. That they were not of that caliber, but there were so many that were that converted. And what was remarkable to me was they didn't want to convert. You know, later on that was not always true. But you know, when you looked at even going back to, say, Moritz Pulitzer, who was Isaac's son, he was the first doctor that at least we know about. You know, and he died in 1809 because Napoleon's soldiers murdered him. But he, you know, there was so much pressure for those people to convert, and he did not. So,
you have another book in you?
Well, you know, I actually do, because when I wrote the book, I had a lot more of me in it, and I started working with an editor, and the editor said, this is two books. You really need to do two books. So at some point I'll go back and do the other one.
Well, this is absolutely fascinating. You know, I did not, Linda, get to not one question on my list. Just I have to have you back. I hope you will come back and spend another 45 back. Minutes with me, because I know we only have a couple minutes left. I want to make sure you hold your book up again. Everybody writes his title down. And there it is. Beautiful, beautiful book. From cover to cover, and then every word inside it is absolutely fascinating. And Linda, for the website, what's the best way, what's the website address so everybody can go on there and find more stories, newspaper articles, videos, and things of that, or what's the website that they can go
it's
to?
It's just PulitzerSaga.com.
Is it just Pulitzer Saga?
Yep, PulitzerSaga.com.
Pulitzer Saga.com. I encourage everybody to go on there. And Linda, thank you so much. I can't wait till the next book comes out. But I hope and pray that that it's only been out 60 days, 90 days, that it just keeps on rising. And hopefully you'll see a bump tonight from all of our listeners going on right now and buying it and start reading it over the week. I think it'd be an awesome, awesome Christmas gift too. Great, great story.
Thank you so much. And it was so wonderful talking with you. I really enjoyed this. It was terrific. Thank
you. Well, I appreciate Kim calling me or writing me and saying, hey, I think I have somebody you would love to meet. And I said, absolutely. It wasn't 30 seconds after I got on the website. And I said, oh, yes, please let Linda know I want her on the program. And I do want you back.
Thank you. I loved it. So it'd be wonderful. Thank
appreciate
you.
Appreciate it, Linda. Thank you so much. And take
thank
care.
You.
Thank you for sharing. We'll have you back soon, okay?
Thank you. Take care.
Like we do each and every week, I always like to end the program the same way. And you heard a perfect, perfect story. No matter what happens in life, no matter what's handed to you, no matter what you're dealing with right now, no matter what you've dealt with in the past, and no matter what you're going to face tomorrow, our guest proved tonight that there's always hope. There's always a chance for hope. Never give up on that. You're worthy of that. You are a masterpiece, and you are a very special, valuable individual. Join us right here next week for another live edition of Breaking the Silence from Houston, Texas. God bless. Have an awesome, awesome week. And as you experience Veterans Day this coming week, don't forget to stop and say thank you to the people that make our country free. God bless. Have a good week. See you next week. Good night.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1 for the next episode of Breaking the Silence.